Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for February. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This month, Brian Charleston will fill us in on the ACB mid-year meeting and legislative seminar, and Dr. Henry Trey Winter will tell us about the work he did to develop the Eclipse Soundscape app, which took the blind community by storm last summer. But we'll start the show by talking about a major event in BSCB, our annual spring convention. Let's check in with Program Coordinator Sharon Strzokowski to fill us in on the details. Good evening, Sharon. Welcome to the show. Happy New Year, because I haven't talked to you since our fall conference, I guess.
Hi, everyone.
So here we are on February 1, a brand new month, a brand new show, and we're here to talk about the upcoming spring conference.
Indeed.
And I know you know a little bit about that because you're the program chair, so if nothing else, you can tell us what's going on.
Okay, I'll do my best. First, I just want to say it's been really fun to work on this year. I've had a great committee. I've had Jerry Barrier, Nona Haroyan, Diana Leonard, and Howard Sumner. And Howard is someone who's fairly new to me. He's only been in the organization a year or two. And I'm just so proud of him for stepping up and helping with this. And Diana Leonard has been in our student division, I believe.
Yes.
And is now, you know, a young adult in the world of job hunt.
Yep.
And Nona Haroyan is also a fairly new member. She was on my committee last year, and she's got a lot of practical ideas.
Yep.
And then, of course, Jerry Barrier, we all know from a long time.
Absolutely.
And so he was a good anchor. And Frank Ventura, who's our overall convention coordinator, joined us on the calls.
Ah, yes.
And he would say, wait a minute, I need to know this, blah, 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 you know, because he's been doing this for a long time.
Sure.
So he was, of course, very helpful. And then we reviewed a couple things with our president, Brian, as well. So I think it's been a really good effort and in brainstorming and then the follow-through that you have to do to make it happen.
So what can we look forward to this year?
All right. So Friday afternoon, we start at 1:15 or so, and we're going to have a yoga class, and don't be afraid. You don't have to know any yoga. Last year, we had a yoga class which had very simple poses and a lot of breathing, and people really enjoyed it.
Yes, I think it was something like armchair yoga.
Exactly right. There was no mat.
You know,
right. Nobody was on the floor.
Right.
And we will be on the chair again this year.
Uh-huh.
And this year, it's a yoga instructor who actually is from my church here in Worcester.
Oh.
And I know her a little bit, and she's going to do some kind of body, mind, spirit kind of thing. In fact, that's the name of her company. And there will be yoga, but also a little bit of stress reduction. I'm not quite sure what's in store for us, but she's a very gentle person, and she was very excited to share with the blind community. That will be till about 2. And then the rest of the afternoon is about travel. So we're going to have a discussion of how to travel around safely in unfamiliar environments. Joe Kolb, who's been a long-term mobility instructor at the Carroll Center, is presenting. So then, and I can't remember the exact order of how this is going to be, but anyway, we're going to have a presentation by Jerry and Diana about booking flights online.
Ah.
Which can be very daunting.
Oh, yes,
you know?
It can.
But then Mika Pikula, who has been a travel agent in the past, is going to talk about that and may talk about tips in using a travel agent, but also wants to talk about the meet and assist and greet services at an airport.
Right.
And how to book those and access those. And then we will have a discussion of going on a cruise. David Kingsbury and Deanne Elliott went on a cruise together and booked that, and they'll talk about that. And I believe, actually, Daisy Russell is going to speak about her trip to Nicaragua.
That's yes. Where she went.
And then we're going to have a call-in from Sue at Mind's Eye Travel.
Okay.
And that is a travel agency, I believe in Maine.
Yes.
That that books trips for blind people.
Yes.
And we're very excited to have her as well to talk about what they do, which I believe is national, and they may do some international as well. But I think just her ideas about what you need in a guide and,
sure.
and all of that. And then Nona is going to give a presentation on packing your suitcase.
Ah, okay. Well, it's an important part of the travel plans if you don't do that right.
Very inefficiency about that. So,
yes.
As I say, I'm not sure I have it all in the right order, but basically I think it'll be a very full afternoon.
It certainly sounds that way to me.
Yeah, and I think there'll be some technology in it, but also some real practical tools and life experience.
Yeah.
And so I hope that people can come for as much of that as they can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I understand that we're going to have a hospitality suite, and I haven't been a part of that, part of things for Friday night.
I've seen that as well
in the
announcement that Frank sent out via email.
That's right. And I know that there'll be, a student division meeting and a guide dog users meeting.
Yes, the usual Friday night.
The usual
kind
Friday
of
night, you know.
Activities.
So then we go to Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and we will have, of course, introductions by Brian, our president, and a report. And we're going to be having, as our keynote speaker, David Trott, who is from Alabama.
Alabama, you're
Alabama.
Right. Alabama.
Got to get it right.
Yes, that's
and
right.
He is our treasurer,
mm-hmm.
and he's not going to talk finances, I don't think, all that much. I think he's going to give us an overview of what's happening in ACB. Very engaging man.
Yes.
Very engaging. I've been on some board calls with him, Lua and that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
Actually, he's on rehab task force with me. So he'll be there. And Commissioner Paul Sehner will speak, as he usually does, to give an update on the Mass Commission for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think usually in the morning we have some initial readings of any bylaws or constitution.
Yeah, there's the usual business stuff that happens on Saturday throughout
kind of
the
thing.
Day, interspersed mm-hmm. through the day, which seems
which
to work well.
Works well.
Yeah.
And then there'll be lunch, and,
mm-hmm.
and people can purchase a box lunch, which I recommend doing because it's so much easier.
Yes, and we have seen in the past that if a whole bunch of people descend on the restaurant, everything gets behind and we can't get started on time again. And I'm sure – and people do have the choice. I mean, it's not like you're forced to eat the box lunch.
No.
But for many of us, that will be convenient.
So then – and again, I don't remember the exact order of this, but I know that we're going to be hearing from Eric Manser, who is a guy that most people have heard of in the blindness community.
Right.
He works for Microsoft now, and he's going to talk about that whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he's going to talk about being a blind triathlete.
Okay.
And then Deanne Elliott and a group of people have been working with Mass Eye and Ear Infirmary to negotiate better conditions for patient care for blind people there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they've come up with some technologies, which I have not seen, but make it possible for you to order from the menu yourself when you're in the hospital and different things like that.
Yeah, because so much of that is now getting more high tech than it used to be.
You know, the touch screens and everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're going to present about that.
Okay.
And then we're going to have a presentation from the Vibrant program. And this is a program that Mass Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired has instituted in Worcester and I believe in Brookline to assist people, primarily seniors, but not necessarily, with technology needs. So the program is free to them, and the volunteers who do it, you know, do it as a volunteer thing. And then I think then there's more readings, and then we have elections.
Yes, the end of Saturday afternoon is always the business portion of the conference.
And that will bring us to 5 o'clock and time to dress for the banquet.
Yep.
And I don't have a lot to do with the banquet. Of course, we'll have an award ceremony. And I believe Jerry and Cheryl Cummings, who are working on that.
On the awards, yeah.
On the awards. But what I was able to do, and I'm very excited about this, is that our banquet speaker is going to be Rhonda Trott, who is David's wife.
Yeah.
Now, I had the idea of her because she has been the convention tour coordinator for the National American Council of the Blind Convention.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, there have got to be a lot of stories.
I bet there are. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So that would be very good and light. And, you know, by that time of the day, we don't need heavy advocacy.
Absolutely not. That's been taken care of long ago. Hopefully.
That's right. So,
and that brings us up to the auction, right?
To the auction.
Yeah.
Now, again, I believe Nina Kagan is.
Yep.
Working on that.
She is.
And so that'll be always fun.
Yes.
And people are encouraged to bring things and to bring money.
Mm-hmm.
and to...
Bid.
And that
finishes up Saturday, I think.
Yes.
Right?
And then we're on to Sunday. Mm-hmm. And as been our practice for a while, I think we usually have a couple of more moments of memorial for anyone who might have died in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into Kim Charlson's
library update. Yep.
Which is, she always prepares very thoroughly and
Yeah. Yep.
And then we're going to have a member, his name is Gerard Boucher, and this came about, he has been a veteran, he's I believe in his 80s, and has been on a disability commission and just had a very interesting life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a major financial sponsor.
Yes, I know
for
that.
For a convention.
Yes.
In an extremely generous way, and very unassuming man, but he's excited to come and talk for a few minutes about his life.
Okay.
And I hope that people will give him good attention and honor him, really, because
yes.
He's done a lot. And then we're going to have some people who are serving on disability commission panels in various cities
mm-hmm.
of Massachusetts to talk about what they do, how they got on it, why others in the audience might want to become involved. And that will be very interesting,
yes.
I think. And then we'll have some committee reports. Deanne Elliott is our legislative committee person, and that committee is always on top of all kinds of advocacy. And, of course, we will have had the legislative seminar by that point,
yes.
Which is happening at the end of February. So there may be discussion about topics that were covered there that we can dovetail with and
advocate on a local level.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I believe that Rick Morin will present on transportation, which of course is
yes.
Our everyday,
yeah.
You know. And then, you know, we have a couple of new chapters. One of them is ours in central Massachusetts
mm-hmm.
That Emily Luce is president of and I'm vice president of.
Right.
And then there's a new one in Boston. And I know that the diabetic group has been very much trying to meet together. Then Rick will give a treasurer's report, which is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so there it is.
Well, Sharon, thank you very much for being with us tonight. And, of course, we shall see you in March at the convention.
Absolutely. And we will not have snow and we will not have any disruptions.
That's right. The sun will be shining from Friday to Sunday. It'll be 70 degrees. Oh, wait.
Not that warm.
No,
that's too warm.
Won't be like that.
Nobody will come.
they'll be too busy engaging in other things that are fun.
That's right.
Thanks again, Sharon.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Steve Dresser, and you're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. As many of you know, ACB will hold its annual mid-year affiliate president's meeting and legislative seminar on February 24th, 25th, and 26th. As our president, Brian Charleston will be attending the meeting, and as someone who's attended many a meeting of this sort, he's here to fill us in on some of the details. Well, Brian, Happy New Year, because we really haven't spoken on this show anyway since 2017.
God, can you believe how fast time travels?
Yes, it does. Sometimes fast, and sometimes it seems like it just takes forever to move a tiny, you know, half an instant.
It's an interesting time, though, to be a blind person and advocating for quality services.
Yes.
Back when you and I were young, a lot of things hadn't been done yet. But you know how it goes with laws and things. There's the first you get the law passed, then you have to get the regulations written, mm-hmm. and then you have to find some way to enforce it all.
That's right.
So you're never quite done with all of those things. Plus, of course, the world around us changes
too.
What we're doing
sure.
now. So there's lots of things of a legislative nature we have to deal with. Certainly here in the Commonwealth, we've got to deal with things like the budget.
That's right.
We've been reviewing everything associated with it and what impact it's going to have on blind and visually impaired people. And I really hope that all those who are listening now will be listening through the month of March. Many, many things will be happening in March. Not only our convention. Thank you, Sharon, for sharing the program with the audience. We
That's
do
right.
Blind Day, our legislative day down on Beacon Hill. And, of course, we're going to be heading down to Washington, D.C. shortly to
yes.
Capitol Hill.
That's right, where we take all of what we've just been talking about on a local level and apply it nationally.
The times I've been to this meeting, it always starts with the ACB board holding a one-day, all-day meeting.
Right.
Then the next day, there's a president's meeting. These are the affiliates who are in attendance for the weekend.
Yes.
Come together, and they get a little bit of a primer on how to run your affiliate more efficiently, answering questions, dealing with simply the logistics of keeping organizations like BSCB thriving. It's how can we live within our means? It's, you know, picking your battles. That's, again, a very common kind of thing to deal with. And how to engage more members
yes.
in the activities.
Yes.
You know, Steve, that old 80-20, you know,
mm-hmm.
80% of the work gets done by 20%
of the people.
But, you know, we just forgot to ask people. And that's one of the reasons why committee activities are so important. You know, the board gets together for a hour and a half, 2 hour conference call once a month. So we get some things done there. But really, the nuts and bolts, the writing of documents, the researching questions, all of that happens between meetings and typically by committees.
Well, even
like the convention committee.
That's right.
For example.
I was just going to say that even our upcoming conference, which I'm very excited about, and I think other people will be too once they know what's going on. But that's
exactly.
all done by committee.
All yeah. done by volunteers.
That's right.
And that's the other thing that people sometimes forget. When you're being at all critical of what somebody's done, remember that most of us are volunteers.
Yep.
And
yep.
we're trying to balance this activity with our obligations at work, our obligations with family.
Yep.
And, you know, other causes we care about.
Yeah. The rest of life.
So there's a group of us Bay Staters who are heading down to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying down on the 22nd.
Okay.
But the meetings actually are held. Saturday is the board meeting.
Sunday is
the president's
meeting.
Monday is a legislative update to get us all nicely educated on the issues we'll be taking to the Hill
yep.
on Tuesday.
Tuesday is the day you go to the Hill.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then fly home and try to explain to the boss why you're all exhausted on
yeah,
Wednesday morning.
Too tired to work for the rest of the week.
There you go.
Yeah.
So Bay State has placed in its budget sufficient funds to support several people to go to this year's meeting. It all depends on our available cash,
of
how
course.
Many people we underwrite. But we will have myself as president, Deanne Elliott as chair of the legislative committee. We will have Carrie
Scholar is going?
Carrie Scholar, right. She's both a board member, but she's also a good representative of our student affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're delighted to deal with that issue of, you know, educating the next generation, like we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We have David Kingsbury is going. Kim Charlson, of course, as ACB president, is going. Mm-hmm. Rick Morin is going. Not all of these get finances to support
no.
their time
no.
down there. But there they go anyway, on their own nickel or dime.
Is Daisy Russell going, or is she not?
Daisy is going.
Oh, okay.
So there's a guide dog user. So we have Daisy, Carrie, two young people.
Well, and Daisy's also president of the BSCB students.
Correct. So we're doing our best to try to bring a real cross-section.
And that's very important.
Yep.
Very important.
So all of that is going on. Then we, when we get down there, of course, the national office has been putting together support material for the issues we're going to take on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always difficult to do these things because you have to do them early enough to be able to get everything printed and brailed and all that kind of stuff, but late enough to still be relevant in some fashion.
That's right. And what happens in a case where something really important comes up after the materials have been brailed? Is that part of what's covered in the legislative session on Monday?
Exactly.
Okay.
So we don't limit ourselves just to the subjects on Monday. We also talk about how to do, you know, consumer advocacy, lobbying on the Hill.
Right.
Those kinds of things. And we educate ourselves on issues that are ongoing. Mm-hmm. Things like, I'm sure we'll be hearing a bit about guide dogs and their right to fly on airplanes.
Oh, yes, with all of what Delta has done. Yeah,
exactly, hubbub. The topics that you can expect that we will deal with are long-term projects. One is the demonstration project of low-vision aids. This is something that has been one of our big issues for the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
And people listening to the show need to understand that it is very common that a piece of legislation takes years to get through the system.
That's right. You introduce
it with half a dozen members of the House or Senate or a combination thereof, and then it doesn't pass in its first year, not enough sponsors. So you spend that year trying to boost the number of sponsors for the next year and the next. And, of course, some are going and some are coming.
Right.
So you have to reaffirm those things as well.
Yeah.
Another subject we'll be pushing and will continue to push until the scales are tipped the right way is funding of smaller entities. So funding the Rehabilitation Services Administration.
Right.
Which provides 80% of the dollars that we spend here in the Commonwealth on services of the Mass Commission for the Blind. We need to get funding for the American Printing House for the Blind because it's the primary producer of learning materials
right. For
K-12 kids.
Yep.
And, you know, a list of those kind of entities, we need to keep them moving. The Access Board, for example, that establishes standards for accessibility, they need to be funded. It's so easy for that to go the wrong way. What was the budget? Didn't they say it was something like 500 pages long?
I can believe it.
500 pages.
That's a lot of pages.
And it only requires a comma here or a semicolon there to change the whole meaning of something.
That's right.
So that's why we have to be on the Hill talking these things.
Yes.
I don't want people to think that the only time we get involved in legislation, even on the national level, is when we're in D.C., although we have a great staff person down there, Tony Stevens.
Tony Stevens, of course.
Yeah, Tony Stevens. He really keeps his eye on the ball down there.
Yes.
But what was it? It was Tip O'Neill, the former congressman from Massachusetts, who said all politics is local.
That's right.
So we need to get out and speak to their home offices, not just the staff and the elected member
right. When
they're in D.C., but when they're back here in the Commonwealth as well. So that's one of our New Year's resolution for legislative activity is to schedule that and then what?
Yes.
Among those who are attending, so that we can come back here and say, you know, I was visiting the senator or the representative's office back in late February, and I wanted to see, you know, get a bit of a progress report on their involvement in our issues. And I also want to introduce you to us and know that in this district where we're sitting, we have members, because we have all the data that could tell us how many members we have in each congressional district and those kind of things.
That's right.
So it's developing relationships that can last for years.
Yes.
we're very lucky here in Massachusetts. Our delegation is very supportive of our issues. So, to some degree, it feels sometimes like singing to the choir, you know?
Yes. But it's a much bigger choir, and so really we're not singing to the choir. We're singing to a small subsection of the choir, and I guess what we get the opportunity to do on the Hill is to talk to some of the folks who may not be as sympathetic to our causes, and B, may not even understand them well enough to be sympathetic.
And keep in mind that the vast majority of the work on these smaller issues are dealt with by staff.
Right.
In the congressional offices. And those staff members change.
Yes.
More rapidly than do the actual office holders themselves. So it's always educate, educate, educate.
Yep.
So that's you know, a big thing that we're dealing with right now. Bay State, though, doesn't limit itself to small issues. We get involved in some pretty big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have... in the process of signing kind of a structured negotiation process with a little entity called Hulu.
Okay.
So those who enjoy video online, whether it be for entertainment or education or whatever, we're working with them in the same way that we were working with Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And succeeded at making all of that accessible.
Right.
For us, whether we're accessing it on our smartphones or on our smart televisions or on our
not
smart
so smart
computers.
Or not so smart televisions, yeah.
All of that stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're involved in that. We're also involved in another thing. It's not as far along, and it's quite honestly a much more convoluted thing, and that's something called the Common Application. This is how college students these days apply to college. Not like in our day, Steve, when we got pieces of paper and we had to fill them out.
That's right. Or our parents had to fill them out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's all online.
It's all done online, yep.
But just because it's online doesn't mean it's accessible.
That's right. And we've certainly found that out over the years.
Exactly. We're very lucky that we have a very active student group in the Commonwealth that we can rely on. But we also have members who are high school counselors who have to access this stuff as well.
That's right.
And not to mention blind parents of sighted kids. Now, while this is a national issue, we've kind of taken the lead on it here in the Bay State. I do expect that we will be moving forward with that before the ACB National Convention, but I'm also sure that we will be submitting to the ACB National Committee that deals with resolutions. And ask them to pass a resolution in support of our activities and to engage them. In fact, I'm speaking with the advocacy committee next week to try to engage ACB in this national issue with us as partners. We also know that if we want to submit a complaint letter to register a complaint with a court, then the two most supportive courts in the land are in Massachusetts and California.
There you go.
So we play an important role, just like we did in our nation's history. We play that role in modern times.
Well, thank you, Brian, for filling us in on all the important things. Your first time to do that in 2018, and it sounds like it's going to be a big year of work and hopefully change for all of us.
That's what all of us are working together to achieve, and I'm really lucky to have such great people working for Bay State as committee chairs, as board members, and members at large as well.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. Last summer, on August 21st, a major eclipse took place. The eclipse was visible in much of the country, including New England. That in itself is significant. It doesn't happen very often, but of even more significance was an app that was used by blind people to experience the eclipse in ways that we normally don't get to see it. The name of the app was the Eclipse Soundscape, and it was developed by a group of folks at Harvard, and we were lucky enough to have one of them with us this past November. Here's David Kingsbury to introduce him.
Our speaker is Dr. Henry Trey Winter from the Smithsonian Astrophysical Laboratory. That's a lot of words for me to get in there, which is based at Harvard. He was the primary developer of the Eclipse Soundscapes app. Can I ask, not by a show of hands, but a show of applause, how many of you downloaded the Eclipse Soundscapes app? Okay, so you have a knowledgeable audience here. I would just look to see. Okay. I don't think so. I like to say, you know, my own experience on that day was I had the app, and I think the objective of that app, at least in my case, and I know I was sitting next to Brian Charlson, was accomplished. We really felt that that eclipse was something we were experiencing. Granted, in our own ways, differently from how sighted people do it, but we felt part of the whole thing. And that's sort of the type of thing that in the past it's like, well, that's just something for other people. And I didn't really feel that way. And having that app on my iPhone in my hand in front of me definitely contributed to a feeling like I was part of this experience. And Dr. Winter is, for me anyways, one of the main people to thank for that. So with that said, Trey, take it away.
So thanks for inviting me out. My name is Dr. Henry DeGreffery Winter III. Nobody calls me that. It's a very fancy name for an unfancy man. Please call me Trey. And yes, I am. You know, I've heard the term the doctor from the Smithsonian. If anybody has any chest pains, I am not the person that you want to help you. I have one of these useless doctorate to some. It's in astrophysics, and I do work at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. It's at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, just off the main campus. So I'm right around the corner. If you guys ever want to talk to me about stuff, and I would be more than happy to work with you and this group more and more. So just a little bit about myself. Like I said, I'm an astrophysicist. I do primarily solar astrophysics. If anybody wants to know why I got into astrophysics in the first place, when I was young, there's this little movie, you may have heard of it, it's called Star Wars. And there was this guy, you probably haven't heard of him, his name was Han Solo, he played a minor role, and he flew spacecraft, and his best friend was brown and furry named Chewbacca. And for 16 years of my life, I was actually flying satellites, or basically spacecraft for a living, and my best friend was brown and furry, and his name was Chewbacca, and he drooled a lot. So we're just going to label that under hashtag winning. So I kind of come from this background of looking at things and enjoying exploration and art and trying to think about what hasn't been done yet and how do we explore this universe around us. And that's actually my main reason for being, how do we explore the universe that we all live in different ways than we've done before so that we can learn new things? And I primarily study the sun. In fact, I was part of a mission team that proposed an instrument called the Atmospheric Imaging Assembly. It's four telescopes. We put on a satellite named Solar Dynamics Observatory. I work for NASA, so everything's acronym, so it's AIA and SDO and all these things. But it produced the most beautiful images of our local star that have ever been produced. And it was this amazing experience for me, and the images were just alive and engaging, and for me put the sun in this beautiful perspective that I wanted to share with everybody. And so I kind of took off my scientist hat and put on my other, I have many nerd hats. Scientist is only one, Star Wars fan is another. The other one is basically I break technology apart and I put it together in new ways. And I broke apart some technology that the video game industry had developed, because the video game industry's global revenue is 5 times out of the NASA budget. And they put one NASA's worth of budget into these very sophisticated computers called graphics processing units or video cards, and I hacked them to do these video wall displays very cheaply for museums. And, of course, museums love things that are cheap and are beautiful and attract people. And so I was doing all these video wall displays showing off the sun, and I got I saw that one of the museums I was working with had some accessible exhibits. And I was like, that is fantastic. I'm going to go see what these accessible exhibits are like. And it was of an Egyptian death mask. I remember this clearly. You know, very ornate and all this intricate detail. And, of course, it's, you know, 2,000 years old, so it's under glass. You can't touch it. And the accessibility portion was basically two lines of Braille that gave you the date of the object and the name. And to me, it was kind of a wake-up call, because in no way knowing when this thing was produced or its name gave you any experience of the object, gave you any knowledge. There's no way that you could engage with the object in that way. And then it was really humbling, because I realized that my exhibit down the hall didn't even have the Braille labeling. And at that point, I just thought that this wouldn't do. And I wanted to share this experience, this excitement that I have every time I study the sky and study our local star, or stars that are exploding in their final phases of life and exploding, causing explosions that are larger than our entire solar system. I want to share this with everybody, because it is amazing. And that's what led me to start thinking about, how do we change the narrative of astronomy? How do we change a field of expertise that's been primarily visual in everything that we do and everything we communicate? And how do we communicate these in different ways? And as I always find out, I'm not as smart as I think, and people have been doing this before. And if you're not familiar, there's a wonderful person named Noreen Grice, who's produced some great books about the universe. It's Touch the Universe and Touch the Sun. One of my colleagues had just barely started doing some 3D print work. Her name's Kim Arcand. And there is a website you can go to, Google Hold a Dying Star in Your Hand, and you can find out how to make a 3D print of a star at the end of its life when it explodes and becomes something known as a supernova remnant. And it's part of these dying stars, actually. That's the reason why I can be in this room talking to you, because the things that make us up as human beings are actually all star stuff. It is all parts of dead stars. It's only the carbon and all the parts of us that are not hydrogen, right? They're all made in these dying stars at their last phase of life, exploding out into the universe until they coalesce into planets like ours and into people like you and I. So you can hold all that in your hand, not to scale. So when I was going to a series of conferences, I made some really good friends in the blind, visually impaired community, one of whom is Chansey Fleet. I don't know if you know Chansey. She's amazing. She works at the New York Public Library, Andrew Haskell, Braille and Talking Book Library, and I was showing off this book that NASA produced, which I thought was a bit off, and it was a book about the total solar eclipse that was coming up. And she went through the book, and I said, I'm not going to guide you through it, I'm not going to tell you anything about it, I just want you to experience the book and tell me what you think. And what we found is that the book made some great strides, and you know, there was Braille and a raised tactile map of the path of the eclipse in the United States, it actually provided more disinformation than information. It was unclear a lot of the parts. But what I really thought was lacking was what David was talking about. There was really no sense of the awe or the wonder. There was no sense of, you know, this is an event that you could actually be a part of on the day. You could just learn some facts about it. And that's not the same as experiencing something. And Chansey asked me to explain what an eclipse was like to her. And I was caught completely flat-footed, because all of my context is visual for these things, and all my language was visual. And so I remembered a story that a friend of mine told me when he saw his first eclipse about, he was in a field, and when the eclipse happened, day basically becomes night, and a lot of animals get confused. And the crickets in the field thought it was nighttime and thought, oh, hey, it's nighttime. Time to find a mate. And they start chirping like mad, right? Even though it's almost noon in the daytime. And it was very shocking to him. And then when the eclipse ended, the crickets thought, well, that was short. I didn't find a mate yet, yeah, funny enough, right? The beer goggles had not had enough time to take hold. Yeah, and so, yeah. And they all switched off, and the silence was deafening. And that was something that Chansey engaged with, and that was exciting to her because that was in her experience. And that's when we decided to do the Eclipse Soundscapes Project. And the Eclipse Soundscapes Project was an effort to make the total solar eclipse of 2017 accessible to everybody, capital E, everybody. It's not made for people who are blind, visually impaired. It's not made for people who are deaf. It's not made for people who are sighted. I wanted it to be for everybody. And what I really wanted to do was have a way that people who are blind and visually impaired could have a two-way conversation with their sighted peers on the day of the eclipse. What I, in my limited experience, right, I'm not an expert in the needs of people who are blind, visually impaired. I'm an astrophysicist by training. This is all new to me. But in my limited experience, what I'd found was that when I saw people who were working with people who were blind, visually impaired, that conversation was always one way. The sighted person was explaining to the person who had a vision impairment what was going on. And I wanted that conversation to be two ways. I wanted to give people independent access to the eclipse, and not just feeding them information, but also why this information was important, the experience of the eclipse, why you people spend their lives chasing these things down. We went through a lot of variations because originally we were just going to record wildlife sounds, and it turns out that that's harder to compile all that data. In fact, we're still waiting on the National Park Service. National Park Service was one of our partners in this project. They recorded how wildlife reacted in 16 different national parks, both on and off the eclipse path, and we hope to have all of that information available and ready for you to interact with and explore in an accessible way early in 2018. Wow. And I apologize for it taking so long. It just is actually more of an effort than we thought. Yeah, it will be accessible both via the app and the web page. I will tell you that it's easier to make an accessible web page to these large databases than it is to the app. What we will probably do in the app is have a series of like guided tours so that you can like, oh, I want to see what it was like, or I want to hear what it was like during the eclipse in an urban area, and you can hear everybody go, woo, or you can go to one of these national park sites, and you can hear, like, you know, the birds, actually, some bird species instantly coming on and off. But what we ended up doing with the app, since we wanted it to be live in real time so that people could be out with their friends and families who are sighted, we ended up doing a couple of different things. One of the things we did is we partnered with the National Center for Accessible Media, and we did these great illustrative descriptions of images. And what the people at NCAM are really good is taking these images and breaking them down. What's the information in there? What is this image trying to say? Why is this image captivating? And they give us a text, right, that explains what is inside the image. And we've got two ways for you to access that in the app if you haven't played with it before. One way is by hearing the dulcet tones of Brian Gould, who works for WGBH radio, telling you what is in the image. They would not let me talk. I don't know why. My southern accent ain't that strong, y'all. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. We don't barbecue no briskets. We're pork. Right? Sorry, my mouth has been drooling during the entire discussion, and I maybe have already bought my Instapot. We realize that that's not always the best way for people to access this information, and I've always been amazed at how quickly people who are blind, visually impaired use their screen readers to go through the information. So it was very important for us to make sure that the text, that actual script that was being read off, was there so that you can access it in any way that you want. The other thing that we did that we are super proud of is what's called the Rumble Map. So if you haven't played... Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We're pretty proud of this. So what we did is, this is a basic realization that was made a long time ago. Most information in astrophysics actually isn't visible. Most things actually occur outside of the limited window that the human eye is designed to detect. One of my friends studies gravitational waves, and there's this big news thing out a couple of weeks ago about there was the first detection of a gravitational wave with an optical component. Why is this important? A gravitational wave is caused when two neutron stars, right? These are stars that are far more massive than our sun, but all of their, and our sun is a million Earths large. So if you can imagine traveling around the globe, take about 24 hours to circumvent it nonstop, right? All of that times a million, then you get how big our local star is, the sun. Imagine a star larger than that, but it's been compressed to the size smaller than Boston, right? So super, super massive stuff twirling around each other and colliding in an explosion so large that not only does the explosion cause heat, light, and all these things we associate with explosions, it actually rips and rends the fabric of space and time itself, causing a ripple that goes throughout the universe. That's not visual, but that's still awesome. And so how do we encode this information in different ways? And astronomy's been doing it primarily visually, but what we're doing is we are using sonification techniques. Again, nothing too new, but this is a new application of it, so that if you take your mobile device, and I've got an iPad in front of me, and I've got an image of the eclipse, you can actually physically explore the image. Oops, and I just hit the instruction frame. Don't know how well that's picking up over the microphone. So you can independently go through and explore the eclipse yourself, right? And that was another key part. We wanted the experience to be independent. The other key part, too, and why I think the Eclipse app worked as well as it did, is that as the principal investigator, the guy in charge, I made a statement early on that it wasn't going to be a tool that was just built for people who are blind and visually impaired, but it was going to be built with people who are blind and visually impaired. Because if we didn't do that step, we would have missed the mark. We would have done something that we all thought was neat, but we wouldn't have done anything that really served the community that we are trying to work with. And so we had actually a blind astronomer, the only blind astronomer I know of. I know of a blind engineer. So her name is Dr. Wanda Diaz-Merced. She has a TEDx talk that I highly recommend. But we also had Lindsay Yazzolino, who many of you may know, and worked with us on that app too. And Lindsay is going to be a special consultant for our projects moving forward. I see a question, but I'm running out of time, so I'm going to hold questions till the end real quick. So we had 60,000 people use the app on the day of the eclipse, and that made us extremely happy because this was like a last-minute effort. We did it on a shoestring budget. We had a small team doing the best that we could in about 4 or 5 months, and if you know anything about working with government bureaucracies, I was dealing with two at once and trying to make them talk to each other, the Smithsonian and NASA. So 5 months is about enough time to get people to say, that's a good idea. But we actually did the whole thing in 5 months. But what I wanted to tell everybody here in the limited time I have is that with the success of this app, 60,000 people, and also, too, we're getting 10 downloads a day on average after the eclipse, which we didn't expect. So we're up to over 65,000 users now. And what we've done is we've taken this back to NASA and said, this is what we've done inexpensively. And NASA has taken notice, and the Smithsonian has taken notice. Everybody wants the information to be accessible. Not everybody knows how to make that possible. And I think if we have anything to be proud of at the Eclipse Soundscapes Project is that we've shown a path that it's not only possible, but it's able to add another dimension to everybody's learning. The way I am selling this to NASA headquarters right now is that, yes, this provides this includes now people who are blind, visually impaired, but you've actually added another dimension for people who are sighted so that they can actually see something and touch it and feel it. And there's something so intimate and primal about touch that no matter who you are, that adds a lot to any experience. What we're also finding is that there are a lot of neuroatypical learners that could actually really benefit from not just having an old white guy at a lectern talk to them. By the way, if you're unsighted, you have an old white guy at a lectern talking to you right now. So, sorry about that. We'll make this interactive by taking questions in a minute. But by adding these different dimensions and just thinking about the design and thinking about the end users and how we can use all of the technologies that we've got together in a way to make the message what researchers in this field call multimodal, right? Multiple pathways to learning. But I just call it more exciting because it really engages all of the senses except for smell. I'm not working on that one yet. That seems to be fraught with difficulty. But the message I have for you is that we are listening, and whereas there have been many great benefits and lots of great work done in the past by Noreen Grice, Kim Arcan, and others, I'm hoping to be able to announce in the next 3 to 5 months that there will be a major initiative to make astronomy, astrophysics, and space exploration more accessible and inclusive to everybody, including people who are blind and visually impaired, using the lessons that we learned from the Eclipse Soundscapes app. And I think that's only right and proper, because NASA is yours, all right? NASA is financed by the goodwill of the taxpayers, right? And we thank you very much for your 0.1 cent per tax dollar. We hope that you think we're doing a lot with it. The Smithsonian is yours, right? You own it. You should have freedom to access it in any way that you want. And quite frankly, the universe is yours as well. And if I do anything with my life that's worthwhile, I think it would be improving the accessibility of that universe to anybody who's as interested in exploring it as I am. So I'm running out of time. I could go a lot into the weeds about these different things. If you haven't downloaded the app, it's completely free. And I would appreciate all the feedback that you can give me on it. It's the Eclipse Soundscapes app. You can find it at eclipsesoundscapes.org. I will also say, I'm going to completely brag here. It was the only Eclipse-based app out of, I found 17. It was the only Eclipse-based app that actually met the 508 guidelines for accessibility compliance. But what I'm trying to push on everybody is that is a necessary but insufficient requirement. That's where you start. That's not where you end. And the Eclipse Soundscapes project for me was where I start. It's not where I'm planning to end. So with that, I'll turn it over and I'll take any questions, and thank you so much for listening to me.
Thank you.
All right. I'm sorry, I don't know names. There's a gentleman in the very back with his hand up. You had your hand up earlier. That is you.
I had trouble interpreting the rumble. Mm. So maybe you can explain a little bit how to interpret that thing as you're running your finger across.
Right. Okay, so that's actually a good point. It's science is an iterative process. So here's how you do science. No kids in here, right? You screw up. right? And then you do what's called a lessons learned analysis. It's like, all right, this is how I screwed up. And this is how I'm not going to screw up next time. So I'm always happy to have these lessons learned feedback. So what the Rumble Map does in this Rumble Map version 1.0, there will be a Rumble Map version 2.0 coming out later. Rumble Map 1.0, what it does is it encodes variations between light and dark into a series of very specifically designed tones. And these tones are based on a method. I can get sciencey now. Prove to you guys that I actually went to school and read books and stuff. It's called FM synthesis, or frequency modulated synthesis. And the reason why we chose this technique is that we could actually use the speakers in your mobile device to shake the device, so that not only did you hear the tones, but if you're holding the device in your hand as you run your finger across it, you can actually feel your device shake in your hand and response. And the reason why we did this is because Apple would not release control of its haptic motors for the app. And they still won't. And I am not giving up on that. But what I'd like to do in future, haptic motors are the little motors that make your device vibrate a little bit. And their comment always back was, most users won't use this and it will drain battery life. I was like, well, there are about 7 million people who are legally blind in the U.S. I guess that's not the user base that you want. I'll start working with Google now. Thank you very much. So anyway.
That does work on Android.
Honestly, they wouldn't. It's still a problem. The libraries are actually difficult to navigate to the level of control, but what we're working on is blending the audio, the shaking of the device using the speakers in conjunction with the haptic motors. Because what we found out is that by having to work around the problem, we actually made it better. The haptic motors can't actually do as good of a job on doing this like smaller scale stuff as the speakers can. So to get back to your question, the way that we had, and there are some instructions, maybe they're not clear enough, we'll work on them, but the idea was that you would go through this kind of guided, what's contained within each, and I'm using air quotes here, image, right, for you to explore, what information was in there, what things you might be experiencing, and then when you switch to the Rumble map view, you can actually feel, hear the response to the things that were described by the National Center for Accessible Media. We did find later that some people did get a little confused because they had like Bluetooth devices and something that we were hooking up at the same time, so that maybe they couldn't hear everything or couldn't feel the device. So that's something that we actually put in the instructions a little bit later.
Now, I was using that with an earbud. Should I have been using it with speakers on the phone?
I think that the experience is better with the speakers on the phone or a mobile device. Right. Right. And that's put, like I said, it's in the instructions, but maybe it's buried too deep. So that's a note that I'll take back for when we do this again.
Well, that'll just about do it for Council Connection for the month of February. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, hoping that you'll attend our spring convention in March from the 9th to the 11th, and looking forward to seeing you again next month when I return with another edition of Council Connection. Take care.